Welcome back to the Hardline. Enter at your own risk.
He couldn't fight the feeling, something about it. He knew he couldn't doubt it, couldn't understand it. Branded since the first kickflip he landed. Labeled a misfit, a bandit. Cocoon, cocoon, cocoon. His neighbors couldn't stand it, so he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, one stopped after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here, so I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so he kicked, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. And the way he rolled, just a rebel to the world with no place to go. And so we can't push.
Hey, welcome to the Hardline. Rock's being
declarations
jerk
during the breaks. Unbelievable.
That's a Hall of Fame one right there. Right up there with I don't speed. Gee, I've never been a jerk before. What are you talking about?
I've legitimately never broken the speed limit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't buy it.
I've never, you know, no. What? You take it to crazy places, but the no. I've never broken no. the speed limit part. That's a,
here's my
that's
point.
One.
I don't believe you're lying, but you're like Costanza. It's not a lie if you believe it.
Yeah.
See?
There you are. It's my truth.
That was, that, I was going to say, that, I was, damn it, I was just going to say, that literally goes against everything he's ever said. But yes. By the way, don't watch the HBO show Barry. There's an episode the first season called Living Your Truth.
What a
you can't live
show.
Your truth.
What
you
a great
live
show.
Your opinion.
Mainly because Henry Winkler is honestly slowly becoming one of my favorite current actors. Every one of his roles is incredible. And the fact that he's able to kind of be like a nerd, but he still has the fact that there was one time where he was the coolest guy on TV kind of thing working for him. He plays it so well.
But one of the things I love is how they poke fun at the industry. Mm-hmm. Barry's girlfriend is in his acting class. And you're supposed to like her because the main character likes her, right? And you think, oh, this will be the romantic couple.
Perfect.
And she is the perfect self-absorbed me-first actor.
Yep.
She's sweet and nice, but when it gets down to it, she's an actress and she wants the gig. And it's played beautifully. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. And if you haven't already, watch season one. Season two's just started.
Short.
And just the climax of the first season is so freaking good. That show is incredible. And another show that just shows that, man, America loves a good anti-hero. Somebody you're not supposed to love, but you just can't help it. And the reason that those shows are so successful is because that's just an example of incredibly good writing. When you can take someone who does horrible things, and yet as you watch him do it, you go, yeah, nothing bad happened to that guy.
And my man,
you stick
Barry,
with him.
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader. SNL Pipeline.
What a tremendous actor. He's not just a comedian.
Josh Hader's brother.
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay.
Without the fastball.
Yes.
His fastball is on screen.
I was gonna say, he's got a different kind
his
of fastball.
His fastball's on screen. He's really a good actor. I mean, he's an assassin.
Uh-huh.
And they play it straight. They don't play it for sillies. It's really an impressive performance every week.
I'll tell you what, I thought because it was a comedy, I thought it was going to be revolve around him being an assassin, maybe not being great at his job. The great thing is that it's a comedy about an assassin who's way too good at his job. That's the one wrinkle I didn't realize.
It's the conflict. It's a dark comedy.
Try it out. It's great.
I love anti-heroes. They're the best.
Yeah.
Those really came around in what, the late 90s, early 2000s?
No, it started... It started really late 40s, film noir, and then into, William Holden, Bill Holden, was kind of made being the anti-hero, sort of his thing. Sunset Boulevard, Bridge Over the River Kwai, Stalag 17, all anti-hero roles. And then going into the 60s, Paul Newman did it with several films, and HUD and... Cool Hand Luke, you know, things like that. And so
interesting
going back to that now, but if you go back just those films, Bill Holden, Sunset Boulevard, Bridge on the River Kwai, Stalag 17, that trilogy, you watch that and fantastic, you'll be a Bill Holden fan. And then and then Paul Newman and a handful of his films in the 60s.
I was watching something on the CNN does a great thing on each decade. And I don't know who it was. It was a producer that was talking about The Sopranos and how that was really, maybe it was the rebirth, but it was the birth of the antihero, Tony Soprano, and how that went about. So that's why I thought that. I obviously have not watched too many movies from the 1940s. But
I think, here's what I think. the more modern antihero is truly a bad guy. The guys I'm talking about are flawed heroes that you really mm-hmm. shouldn't like.
Yeah.
But, you know, they kind of usually they find a way to redeem themselves and that sort of thing. But I think you're right. The modern antihero is a bad guy.
Right.
And truly a bad guy.
That we just like.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right. And I think you're right about
it's
that.
It's become kind of a hallmark more of prestige television than necessarily the movies, because you look at The Sopranos, obviously starts out HBO, and then you look at some other ones. You have Dexter, you have Breaking Bad.
Yes.
You have now have Barry, where it's these much longer forms, where instead of sticking with Cool Hand Luke for 2 hours and really only questioning what he's doing for about 15 minutes of that, you have an entire episodes where you're like, why do I keep rooting for Tony?
Yeah.
Or you have an arc where you're like, how do I keep rooting for Walter White not to get caught? Mm-hmm. But yet you do.
Yeah.
Because that's the story they tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, exactly. Why we like Making a Murderer. If we had heard the police's side of Making a Murderer, we would think this guy was a killer and he needs to be in prison forever. But we heard Stephen Avery's side of it, so we're like, this is unjust. It is criminal to put him
Isn't
in jail.
Funny?
By the way, guys, he was burning cats alive, okay? He was a criminal. He's probably a murderer. And doesn't he have something else coming up as well? There's a new Making the Murderer coming out, I believe. Anyway, something else came up about that I just saw. Hey, Rock, can you play? It is time for the Rammer 5.
Oh.
Can you play our background music?
Or, oh, yeah, what was that? Why don't you play my walk-up music?
I actually completely forgot what our walk-up music for Rammer was.
No,
now I remember. Yeah, my bad.
Was it... No, something above it with Lil Wayne. So anyway, Rammer, I have 5 questions for you today. I have many more, but I thought to myself, if I want to keep doing this, I can't use all my questions unless they're relevant either today or...
Still think we should now impose it. We're going to go around the world with
it's
Rammer.
The Rammer 5.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't like the sound of that. This is the morning show. We're all right.
Is it playing, Rock? Are we off and running?
No, there's nothing playing.
I can't afford headphones, guys.
Lil Wayne.
Dun, 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 dun. All right, boys, here it is. Question number 1, the Blues win/lose this series, fill in the blank there, decide which one, in how many games?
I think it's folly to do that, but I'll play the game.
All right.
And say Blues in 6.
I'm totally with you. That's exactly what I think. I think they're going to split the first one, and then they'll end up...
Win their home games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's exactly right. All right, good. Rock, did you want to chime in on that?
No, answer.
What would really be funny, and I wouldn't be shocked, win both games in Winnipeg and come back and lose both games at home.
Yeah,
that's
how
close it is, and that's just kind of how it goes. But I think they'll win that 6th game. It'll be their 4th victory.
I'm with you. All right. True or false, Colton Wong has officially turned the corner under Mike Schilt, and this is more the permanent Colton Wong. Obviously, he's not going to bat 460 for the season than the guy that could not stay on the field under Mike Matheny.
I think he's into the turn.
Okay.
He's slowed. He's in the turn. He's just about breaking out of the turn and hitting the gas and getting through the turn. He's not through the turn yet because we're only a couple weeks, not even 2 weeks in. But it sure appears, let's see how he reacts when he drops an obvious double play ball or swings and has a horrible at bat in a big moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll show him in the next inning out on the field mumbling to himself. We haven't seen that yet. Having said that, I know we'll talk some Cardinals before we're done.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the immediate future, meaning the next few days, I think I'd platoon Wong and Bader out of the two hole, so that Ryu is going the night left hander. I'd put Bader second.
Move Goldie back to 3.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah,
they won't because they don't want to admit that they need to do something different yet.
They will.
There's an ego. There's an ego involved once you put something in motion.
I just thought there would be less of that with Schilt than everybody else. A guy that's not been... I think typically guys who are players have far more egos with that sort of stuff who came up through the system.
Once they signed Goldschmidt, the skipper has been thinking about it every day, all day. And he's really convicted to the reasons he's batting him that way.
Mm-hmm.
He's not as, and I'd be more willing to adapt to the moment. I'm okay with that. That's why I would do that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I agree with your stance on that. I could make an argument myself too that guys who did not play would have an inferiority complex and therefore be more staunch in their ways too. I think you can make an argument on both sides.
Agreed.
All right. Question number 3: the 3 free throws by Kyle Guy for Virginia to win the game was the most clutch performance you have seen since clutch moment, clutch whatever.
Wow.
By the way, those three, just if you guys missed the game, he, with less than a second left, guy walks underneath him and fouls him. He has been slumping for all but one game this entire tournament. He's a three-point bomb. He hits 42% for the year, but has been slumping. He was like 2 for 26 to start the tournament. He's terrible. Had one, he went 5 for 12 in one game, but basically been in a huge slump. Has not been shooting well, had not looked good at all. They got it to him in the corner for the win. He missed it. He missed that one, too. And, yeah, it probably affected the shot, but not too much. He could have made it. So not only was he slumping most of the tournament, he missed that shot and then had to walk up to the free throw line, hit both of them, and then they call timeout. CBS goes to commercial.
I know. Crazy.
And so everybody's chilling, and he walks back up to the free throw line with nobody else there. I don't know if you guys ever shot free throw. I know you probably have, Kramer. With nobody there, that is
really hard.
Not easy.
It just changes the environment.
It totally does. And he knocks it down like nobody's there. That was unbelievably clutch. And that is the most clutch performance you've seen since.
Yeah, I would say I'd have to pick out one of the moments in the Billikens Conference tournament run. I'm hard-pressed to think of one specifically in that championship game. Because usually, this is just me, I tend to think of all the things we screwed up.
Yeah.
More than
Yeah, we wouldn't have needed those nine clutch performances if you'd have made three free throws, bro.
Exactly. I got to take a pass. I can't think. Nothing's coming right to mind.
The most clutch moment I can remember in history is probably the Santonio Holmes catch from Big Ben in the, I think it was the 08 Super Bowl. That is the most clutch. When somebody says clutch, that's what I think.
It's weird because 3 years later, both Lance Berkman and David Freeze did something I'd put right up there.
Freezer, yeah. Yeah. You can make that argument, and as a St. Louis native,
just as cold blooded.
Yeah, I
might be it. Kyle Guy doing that. That
the difference might is be, one actually won the Super Bowl.
True.
The next one had to go the next game.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Although as a St. Louis guy, I would take Freeze over. And that's Santonio Holmes.
And actually,
anytime.
I'm going to put this right next to David Freeze because it's actually a perfect comparison because you got to go to the next game. Still had to win Game 7.
Oh yeah,
you still had to beat the Rangers in Game 7.
Yeah.
Kyle Guy still has to win this one against Texas Tech.
But since they were free throws, even with everything on it, maybe Bennington in the shootout yesterday. Was it yesterday? Saturday.
That was nails.
Yeah, that was
Saturday.
True.
Man, was that good. By the way, Jake Allen is crapping. I know it doesn't matter anymore. Jake Allen has been crapping shootouts, and Bennington has been nails.
Yeah. That was huge.
All right. Question number 4. Your biggest concern with the Cardinals through 9 games is?
Offense. It was starting because I try to be consistent. I said all along they needed two bats in the offseason. They only got one, and it made them way better, way better.
Mm-hmm.
They still need another bat, and obviously at this point in time, it has to come from within. Is it Wong? I don't know. Maybe it is, but the lineup is really soft right now, and so offense is my concern.
I can say this, at least the improvement we've seen has been in the strikeout. First 5 games, 11, 10, 11, 15, and 17. The next 4, 8, 7, 10, and 6.
So my lineup tonight would be, if I were in Mike Schilt's office, Karp, Bader, Goldie, DeYoung, 4th, Molina, 5th, Ozuna, 6th, O'Neal, 7th, Wong, 8th.
Do you just to keep consistency with Wong? Or why not have Wong
lefty,
with the run?
Lefty on lefty.
Yeah.
And not... I want to wait to move him up to where it's a really good opportunity for him to be successful because I'm still concerned about his emotional fragility.
I think that's absolutely fair.
So when I do move him up, I want him to be hitting in front of Goldschmidt.
Well, boys,
that's what I want.
The Cardinals are going to need 9 runs tonight because the Dodgers are averaging 8.5 a game right now. That is the truth. That's not
those are the numbers. Those are facts.
That is 100. It is a fact. They're hitting home runs at an alarming rate, and they're averaging over 8 runs, like 8.3, 8.5 runs a game. All right, last one, and this is non-sports. The most underrated city in America that you have or have not been to? Probably would have to have been there, but.
You know one that came to mind? We were talking about my 8th grader. We were talking about schools and where they're from and what town and all that. A town I really dug was Spokane, Washington.
Interesting, yeah.
I really dug it. I've only been there once, but I thought it was a really cool place. And then, now if you're talking about little towns, a place like, here's one. here's one that people kind of turn up their nose because it's not as cool place to go skiing or whatever. Glenwood Springs, Colorado. I love Glenwood Springs, right on the Colorado River. And it's just sort of a town, you know, no ski resorts or anything like that. But it's a really, really cool place. It's on the way to Aspen,
mm-hmm.
where you got to be cool just to, you know, get within a 10-mile radius. They won't let you in. But but it's Glenwood Springs is right on I-70 and on the Colorado River. Really, really cool town.
If I had to pick any city to visit that I was only in for a little bit, it would 100% be San Antonio.
That's not underrated, though.
It's not underrated, no. Yeah. Riverwalk was gorgeous. Oh, yeah. I only got to spend...
We can name 40 yeah. awesome cities.
I only got to spend one day in there. I could pick like any city to like go there and spend more time in that I've only been to for a little bit of time and didn't get to really... It'd be San Antonio.
I'm going to give you an underrated state, and that's Wisconsin. Ooh, Wisconsin has lakes everywhere. If you like snow and you get, like, they have snowmobiles up there. Everybody out in the boonies has four-wheelers, so you use them all year round through the snow. And they have, I mean, so much land.
Summers are beautiful,
too. So my grandmother is from, where my dad's from, is Lake Geneva. So there's this giant lake out there, and there's this very small town feel. You go downtown, it's very, very safe. You walk around all these shops and different things. That is, I mean, you can pick wherever you want there. I've been through Madison, not to Madison. But I went up and went skiing at the Dells this past, was it March? And it has been...
Dells are great.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it's all smaller. Nothing's huge. That's why I say it's underrated, right? You're not finding mountains there like you'll find in Colorado. Certainly, you're not finding lakes there.
But the further you go north, deep woods.
Yes.
You can get off the grid up there.
So anyway, I just think Wisconsin is an underrated place in general.
Yeah.
And in sports too, right? But Wisconsin is the school that never gets any credit that just wins Big Ten titles of basketball
and
football.
Win and win and win.
With a bunch of 6'2" white guys and you just don't know how it keeps happening.
Right.
I don't know. All right, let's talk a little Cardinals. We got a little time here. I agree with your assessment on runs, although when you look at what's coming, or I should say what has happened so far with all the guys. Molina's hitting 189. I have zero concern about Yadier Molina whatsoever. But right now his OPS plus is 29. Right? I mean you have three guys with an OPS plus, three guys in your everyday starting lineup with an OPS plus below 50. You are less than 50% of league average in OPS today, on base plus slugging. 29 for Molina, who I have no concern about whatsoever. 49 from Ozuna, who I have a ton of concern about, always and forever. And then Dexter Fowler is at 40, and I think last year he was at 52, so he's even worse than he was last year so far. His OPS, this is amazing, is 106 points lower than just Paul Goldschmidt's slugging percentage of 629.
Yeah.
He's garbage. Look, and everybody keeps saying, well, he's doing good with walks. Yeah, he had like four walks for the first few games. He's got five on the season. He's not walking. Mike Shields is lying to us about the great contact. No, he's not. Go look at the stuff on Fangraphs. He's not making good contact. Mm-hmm. He's not hitting the ball hard. He's not walking. In fact, what he's doing is he's standing out in right field, and when the ball comes right to him, he drops it. He made one nice play. Was it yesterday?
Went to the rail, yeah.
Okay, fine.
That was a nice play.
Sure. It doesn't buy you a 40 OPS.
No.
Even Harrison Bader's glove last year doesn't buy you a 40 a 40 OPS.
Mm-hmm.
So Fowler, we're through nine games. I'm willing to give him 20. And then that's it. Then you are a bench player. You are to be used like Yaro Munoz was going to be used before they sent him down yesterday.
But here's the caveat I would have to that. Somebody else needs to win the job. If everybody else is sort of just bumping along and not really doing anything great, you know, might as well play him as anybody else. On the other hand, you could argue, what are the potential factors?
That's exactly it.
And when you talk about O'Neill in particular, but also Martinez, my guy, hey, he's already had a chance to win a job early, and he's failed.
Mm-hmm.
Ozuna bought himself a little more time with that bomb he hit in a big backhand.
Boy, did he crush that ball.
But he's got to do more. And so nobody's really won those corner jobs yet.
No, but you now have a 99-game sample size of Dexter Fowler being not bad, worst in the league.
Yeah.
Worst two-way player in the league, period.
And only first name, Davis, Baltimore, first baseman, Chris Davis. He's the only player in baseball worse.
Right. And that's over that period. I mean, they had it last year at the end, combined war, which I don't think you and I really buy either of those things. Like, our eyes work pretty well.
Yeah.
But it tells you something. Our eyes tell us he's terrible. And then we have a stat that says, no, he's maybe the worst of the whole league. I'm buying it. My eyes confirmed exactly that. So you have a group of guys here that none of them are standing out. Jose Martinez is batting .118 right now, has not drawn a walk yet this year, and he's slugging .176. You want to talk about OPS plus. I don't even know how this happens, because I thought OPS was based on a percentage of the league. It's minus -25. He's been horrible. In 17 at-bats, he's got two hits. One of them is a double. That's it. That's all he's got.
And unfortunately for him, and again, I'm emphasizing, he's my guy.
Yeah.
He's going to have to earn a spot in the lineup as a pinch hitter first, which is how he did it when he first came up with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Start pinch hitting. Get in a groove, show you're in a groove, then you get more. You got to earn more time.
This would be a tad bit of a different conversation if he'd have hit against the Brewers that ball about 3 feet longer.
Out. Yeah.
Lorenzo Cain stole it.
Yeah.
And that was pinch hit, exactly what you're talking about. Perfect spot. Pulled out Colton Wong to do it, and he crushed it just about 3 feet short. Yep. 3 feet, different conversation. Yep. Now we're saying, well, at least he's a really good pinch hitter.
But I'm more confident in him hitting. You know, will he hit .310 again, or is he more likely to hit .270? Yeah, maybe .270. I don't know. But I know the guy can hit. I'm really comfortable that he can hit, but you got to earn it.
Well, Tyler O'Neill is the guy that I would throw out there if everybody's sucking, because he's got the best glove.
And today.
And the most power.
And today, especially against a left-hander, you know, I that's why I had him in the lineup.
Yeah, it makes sense. In 15 at-bats, he's only got four hits. But three RBIs, he does have two doubles. He's got power, a lot of natural power. He's built like the frickin' Hulk, okay?
Yeah.
It's like he hopes to hit game-winning home runs so they can rip his shirt off and everybody can take pictures. That's his favorite thing. He's not doing much better as far as, like, he hadn't drawn a walk yet. He struck out five times and only 15 at-bats. That's not going to fly, 33% strikeout percentage. But he's got a .267 batting average and a .400 slug. .400 slug is atrocious for him. He's a guy that should be over .500 with ease because he's going to be striking out so much. So when you hit it, it better frickin' go.
Yeah.
But at the very least, he's offering you a glove. And so if you're having Jose Martinez, who, poor guy, I mean, I think there are injuries involved there somewhere because dude can't even move. And Fowler, I also think there are some injuries still involved there because while his sprint speed is better this year, it is, you go to Fangraphs, it is measurably better. Last year, it dropped precipitously. This year, it is measurably better, but still not great and just doesn't look that comfortable. Tyler O'Neill looks comfortable out there, at least.
I feel bad for Dex, and hopefully he can find a way to turn it around, but he looks old.
He does.
When he moves.
He does.
He looks like an old man when he moves, and I know because I see it every day.
I think Jose Martinez looks the same way.
Yeah, but he's kind of always looked like that.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I think that's injuries. I don't think at 31 years old you look that way without injuries.
Like that.
Yeah.
So maybe.
I hope Dex or somebody. I'm not rooting against anybody because I want the Cardinals to do well. Somebody win these jobs.
Listen, I'm not rooting against Dez either, but he's got his money. Maybe just, ride some pine. That's all I'm saying. You got your money, ride some pine. I'm not going to feel that sorry for you. Splashback's Deuce texted and he said, look at Ozuna's goofy batting stance. He starts off balance, and so he lunges and either drives the ball into the ground or barely makes contact. I pointed that out to you once, how it's weird because he starts with this open stance, and his step seems to take him off balance every time. Like, his actual step into his swing seems to take him off kilter every time. It's weird.
I think what he's trying to do with that step is overcome his front shoulder flying out, but it doesn't stop it from flying out.
No, yeah, that's
it's really bizarre. I think that's what he's trying to do, but it's not being successful.
So this is not a stat. People try to give you these, based on defensive run saves and such,
right.
Projection for the year. Colton Wong is already a +2 though through 9 games.
Yeah.
That'll frickin' play. That's on
yes,
pace
it will.
For 33.
Yes, it will.
Now, obviously, he's not going to be in there. That goes up and down, and that changes all the time. But I'll tell you, the play he made out in center field the other day was spectacular.
It was.
And they talked about, Danny Mac talked about that. Just as an athlete in general, if you've ever had to catch a fly ball, it is not an easy thing if you're moving at a fast pace to begin with. The reason that rarely will any infielder ever take those is because running the other direction and trying to catch it underhand is nearly impossible. And then to do that with the confidence that Harrison Bader's not going to put his right shoulder in your chest takes some courage as well. There's a lot that goes into that, and he flies back there no problem, takes a seat, and throws it back in.
Those are fun plays to do.
Those are fun.
They're really, really fun.
So, Cardinals have not played great defense so far this year. Harrison Bader, a plus one, would be better if he had not dropped that easy mm-hmm. one mm-hmm. to start the year. But otherwise, Carpenter, a minus one. Paul DeJong, a minus one. Fowler, a minus one. On pace for the Gold Glove at pitcher, Dakota Hudson, a plus one. There you go.
Okay.
And Michaelis also a plus one. But otherwise, that everybody's pretty much average. And Goldie had an error early on. So you're going to have right. guys that make errors early on. The two yeah. best defenders on this team, two of the three, with Colton Wong, is Harrison Bader and Paul Goldschmidt. They've both had no-brainer, easy errors to start the year. That's going to happen, especially early on in the season. What you need to see, and what I think they've shown fairly decently thus far, is a competent group that's not going to be making those over and over.
Right.
This looks like a pretty good defensive team to me.
I think so, too.
All right, let's talk a little pitching. Do you want to go to break and come back and talk some pitching? Let's
yeah.
do that. We'll be back in a bit. It's Hardline.